Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to 80s Wrestling, the podcast. My name is Jumpin' Jay, and last week we promised you a larger-than-life episode all about King Kong Bundy, and we are set to deliver with my tag team partner, Tommy Five Count Fierro. Good morning, Tommy.
What's going on, Jumpin' Jay? How are you today, my friend?
Listen, I always love doing this show. I always love getting an hour just to talk with you, with the callers, talking about what we all love, the golden era of professional wrestling. But I'm especially excited to talk about King Kong Bundy today with you because you've known him on a personal level. You got to see the man behind the screen. And so I'm very interested in getting your take on it. That's how I'm doing, Tommy. How are you doing?
Good, man. Thank you. And, you said five count. That's one thing right off the top of my head. When you think about King Kong Bundy, one of the first things you think about. And it was really, you know, back then where everything was so much more, you know, gimmicky and entertaining. Him doing that, you know, he set himself apart by just the way he looked compared to everybody else. But what set him apart also was, you know, he was so confident in his ability to defeat his opponent that he didn't want you to only count to three. He wanted you to count to five. So, and he'd always do five after the three count, and the referee would have to count two more. And it's unique. I don't think it's ever been done since then. And it's something that's, you know, again, he didn't need that because, I mean, look at him. And I always use the same example when I talk to people. I say, you know, wrestlers back then were so different looking than today's generation of guys. Like, you know, it was a circus back then where you had a little bit of something for everyone, all different walks and sizes and shapes of life. Like today, you know, everyone is, you know, the majority of guys anyway, are such a cookie cutter version of the next guy where, and again, no disrespect, but say if Daniel Bryan or CM Punk were standing in front of you at the supermarket, if you weren't a diehard wrestling fan, you probably wouldn't, you know, take a second glance at them. They just look like, you know, outside of their outfits and being in the spotlight in the ring, they look just regular guys, just regular average guys. Whereas King Kong Bundy was standing in front of you at, you know, the supermarket when you're checking out. If you don't know he's a wrestler, you're saying, well, holy crap, who's that guy? He's someone. So I think that, you know, he differentiated himself just by the way he looked compared to everyone else, you know, and I mean, we're going to dive into King Kong Bundy and his career today. And we will talk about my personal working relationship with King Kong Bundy. And I'm going to drop a bombshell on here today, Jay. I'm going to, for the first time ever, tell the story of how King Kong Bundy and myself were once partners in ISPW.
Well, I got to admit, Tommy, in my research of King Kong Bundy, I scrolled through his greatest moments. I scrolled through his Wikipedia. I've been watching matches after matches. Never did I hear that he tagged with Tommy Five Count Fierro. Now, that had to be a dynamic duo. You want to talk about the mega powers. We might need to rewrite some history when you drop that bomb.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that in a little bit as well of how myself and King Kong Bundy were actually partners for a short period of time with ISPW. And probably the most popular topic that I want to talk about, and I'm sure, and I want to ask everyone else when they're calling in again, if you're listening live, give us a call. Share your favorite King Kong Bundy memories and moments with us at 516-595-8295. Once again, that's 516-595-8295. Talking about the career of King Kong Bundy. Jay, real quick, I know we have a caller on hold already, but I want to ask you this, and it's an honest question, and I just want your initial reaction when I ask it. I want to know how someone that was in the main event of WrestleMania 2, the main event against Hulk Hogan, and not be in the WWE Hall of Fame. Now, I know that there's obviously some kind of backstory there. whether it be, you know, a lawsuit or something gone wrong, or there obviously has to be some reason why he is not in the Hall of Fame. And I don't know exactly, pinpoint the exact reason, so I don't want to speculate at what it could possibly be. But that aside, it just looks silly to me. It looks silly and looks actually just ridiculous that a man that main evented WrestleMania 2 in a steel cage match with Hulk Hogan is not in the WWE Hall of Fame. Outside of everything else he did, I mean, we can honestly, he worked Undertaker at WrestleMania. We could talk about so many things he's done, but to be in the main event, the final match, the drawing match of WrestleMania against Hulk Hogan in the WWF's golden era at that point, it's mind-boggling to me. What is your initial take when you don't see his name in the Hall of Fame?
I think all wrestling fans have the same kind of gripe with the WWE's Hall of Fame. There seems to be no rhyme and no reason on who goes in and who doesn't go in. A lot of it, as we know, is backstage politics. A lot of it is on who's on good terms with McMahon family or people that pull strings behind the scenes. And so as a pure wrestling fan, it is frustrating to have names like King Kong Bundy, like Demolition, who by their body of work in the impact they had, not just in pro wrestling, but their contributions to growing the WWF, now WWE legacy. If it wasn't for guys like King Kong Bundy in this time era, when wrestling is experiencing a boom, if it wasn't for him and guys like him, the world wrestling entertainment would never have gotten to the point it is now. And so it is very saddening to look back and see these guys who they pushed. They came out with wrestling figures. They came out with posters. They put them on Saturday night's main event. These were the faces of your company. They helped build the empire. And now all these years later, guys like King Kong Bundy are kind of forgotten in the shuffle. You don't see his name brought up as often as it should be. They did a nice tribute when he passed away. But other than that, it's kind of like someone who's been lost in time. And so, yeah, as a pure wrestling fan who, especially in preparation for today, went back and watched some of his highlights, watched some of those matches, saw that main event, WrestleMania, inside the steel cage with Hogan and the storyline building up to it, it's heartbreaking to know people that poured their heart and soul into the entertainment we loved as kids aren't getting the recognition that they deserve at this point.
Yeah, man. And you know what? I thought when WWE had WrestleMania in New Jersey back at WrestleMania 35 a couple years back, I thought he would definitely go into the Hall of Fame that year, and it didn't happen. I do believe, yeah, WrestleMania is in L.A. this year. Now, they have one more chance to get it right because L.A. is actually the location where King Kong Bundy wrestled Hulk Hogan. And remember, WrestleMania 2 was in three different states, and Hogan and Bundy was in L.A. So it would be fitting to put him in this year with it being in L.A. I mean, it should have been done in New Jersey. He was a Jersey guy. But, I mean, they still have another chance to get it right. And I know, you know, we have a decent following. People listen to the podcast and stuff. So anyone out there that might be listening, I mean, I'm sure that you agree with us. I think that probably this would be the year to put him in. What do you think, Jay?
I think it would be fitting, as, like you said, L.A. was the scene of that main event of the kind of the three-city spectacular. And I know I've seen some shoot interviews. I know, like you said, there was some heat behind the scenes between King Kong Bundy and Vince McMahon and the company. But WWE tends to write their own history. And so now that he's passed on, I don't see what would prevent you from inducting him into the Hall of Fame and putting him where he deserves to be, especially since rest in peace. You're not going to have any run-ins with him or probably his family at this point. And so water under the bridge. If you're in LA, put up pictures, put up videos of that big blue steel cage that we love so much and induct King Kong Bundy into the Hall of Fame.
Absolutely, man. Well, let's get out to the callers.
All right. Up first, all the way from Chico, California. Who knows? That might not be too far from where the big blue steel cage housed the mammoth of a man, King Kong Bundy, as he took to destroy Hulkamania. We're talking the longtime friend of the show, Babyface Brian. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen. Hey, I totally agree with Bundy. Should be in the Hall of Fame. I really wish it would have happened while he was still alive, and it, you know, makes me want them to get other guys that are still out there and kicking in there while they could still get up in front of the crowd and speak, you know, Demolition and One Man Gang and Slick, you know, guys that that deserve it. And then Bundy wholeheartedly deserves it. I just want to talk, you know, if you became a fan around the time I did in 86, there was no bigger threat to Hogan's title when I first started watching than Bundy. I mean, they aired that WrestleMania 2 on Showtime as the first time I got to see it. I think it was July 5th of 86. And so you see the buildup when Morocco faced Hogan on Saturday night's main event and Fuji was sick. So Bobby Heenan steps in as Morocco's manager and then calls in Bundy and he gives his big splash, which it always was a little funny to me seeing Sting and WCW, NWA give a splash. And I was just like, man, Bundy's the guy that's got the splash, you know, Sting jumping into somebody across the ring. Yeah, he gets up higher and it's a cool move. But, you know, when you see Bundy with the avalanche, that's the real deal right there. So, you know, he's got my top two, probably my second favorite LJN figure of all time. King Kong Bundy's was iconic. And then it for me, the bigger thing even than WrestleMania too is that from 85 to 88, he was a huge part of the storylines in WWF. He was on 8 of the first 14 Saturday night's main events. He main evented 3 of them. And, you know, he had a little bit of a dip at WrestleMania 3, I thought, with the 6-man tag match, you know, after main eventing at WrestleMania 2. But before he left in 88, he, you know, he faced Orndorff on a Saturday night's main event where Andre pulled Orndorff into the corner and Bundy gave him the avalanche and pinned him. And that set up 2 consecutive Saturday night's main events where he faced Hulk and beat him by count out in the first one. And of course lost in the second one and was gone shortly after in early 88. But, you know, Saturday night's main event was just right below pay-per-views as far as excitement. And, you know, the Hulk was the only guy that was on more of those first 14 Saturday night's main events than Bundy. Piper and Savage each showed up 8 times, but Bundy, you know, 8 matches and 3 of them main events. So this is a guy that he deserves more respect than he gets and more, he deserves to be thought of more than he is. And as much as people talk about his work rate, you know, not being Ricky the Dragon Steamboat or whatnot, this guy sold tickets. He was, you know, part of my favorite angle where it was him and Stud against Hulk and Orndorff when Orndorff made the turn that summer of 86. And he's just a guy that deserves, like I say, so much more. I can't wait to hear some stories from Tommy about his experiences with Bundy and Chris, is it Paley's or Pally's? I don't know the correct pronunciation of his last name, but can't wait to hear more from Tommy, who knew him, you know, personally.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And I agree with everything you said. Now, how far, right when you came out and Jay said it might not be that far from exactly where that was in L.A., how far is L.A. from you?
I'm about 500 miles north, so I'm...
Oh, okay, so that's a good ways then.
Yeah, I'm up in Northern California. There's Chino down in Southern California, and Chico's up north of Sacramento, between Redding and Sacramento. So, Toto Atom is going to WrestleMania this year, and he was saying, hey, if I could, you know, come out, maybe we could hook up. And I said, well, I'm 500 miles away, but, you know, if you want to come by. So, yeah, it's a little further than convenient.
You guys got a kayfabe here. You're Babyface Brian. He's Hail Toto Atom. And just, you know, back in the day, you know, you would never see Iron Sheik and Hacksaw Jim Duggan driving down the – no, never mind.
Would never happen.
But hey, real quick, definitely, before we let you go, what's your favorite all-time? You just have to pick one. It would be the one where he was involved with turning on Bundy instead against Hogan and Orndorff with that turn. That's your favorite Bundy memory?
That's right up there in my favorite all time memories. But I'm probably like everyone else.
You know, that's
where,
my favorite all time angle, right?
Oh man, yeah, definitely the best feud. And I know Roddy's. If you were nailed down, Roddy might be your favorite all time as well. But we got a lot of the same thoughts on wrestling, and that was my favorite angle and still is. And then, with Bundy, I'm like everybody else. Like that big blue steel cage match against Hogan. There's nothing really that tops that for me. And as far as Bundy's career, and then of course that angle with Orndorff making the turn. That's my favorite heel turn, my favorite angle ever. So, yep, right there with you guys.
Awesome, man. Well, we appreciate you calling in every week as always, and we'll talk to you next week. Any big plans this weekend for your brother?
Oh, not too much. I'm happy it's cool. This is the first week
too,
where
man.
It hasn't been happy. It was 115 one day about a week ago. So it's nice to be in the 80s and low 90s around here. So that's good stuff.
Well,
and
at my store right now, it's outside right now. It's 62 degrees.
Excellent.
Oh, yeah.
And like I said, I'm looking forward to what you have to tell us about King Kong Bundy, the man away from the ring. So
yeah,
thanks for the great topic, and I look forward to listening to the show.
All right, brother. Thanks, man. Have
Thank
a great
you so
day.
Much, Brian.
You too. Take
care. All right, Tommy. So we could run down our favorite matches, our favorite moments. I actually found a list of the 10 things that most fans forget about King Kong Bundy, but we have plenty of time to get to all that.
Ooh, I definitely want to hear that.
I'll read through that a little later in the show, but like Brian said, I feel the same way. You knew the man, and I watched maybe four or five what you would call shoot interviews between last week's show and this week's show to kind of get some King Kong Bundy info into my head, and he seems like a very genuine, down-to-earth guy. He seemed like he had a very good understanding of the wrestling business. You started the show off by talking about how wrestlers back then looked like wrestlers. If life was real and one of these guys beat down your front door, if you saw King Kong Bundy, you would be scared for your life. If you saw some of today's superstars, you might be bigger than them and it might not scare you as much. And I saw a shoot interview where he said basically the same thing. King Kong Bundy said when he was wrestling, wrestlers looked like wrestlers. And
yeah,
he
man.
Fit that description. You knew the man personally. You tagged with him. And so I would love to hear your thoughts on King Kong Bundy, who he was, and what he was like to work with, and just some personal stories, if you don't mind.
Yeah, man, absolutely. So obviously everyone knows by now that if you listen to the show, I live in New Jersey. And King Kong Bundy also lived in New Jersey. So, and I've told this story in the past where, you know, back in the day I used to originally promote wrestling events with Dennis Corluzzo, and I was under the NWA umbrella. I did that for a couple years, and then I branched off and started my own promotion called ISPW. And when I first branched off and started my own promotion, I thought that, and back then, you know, a lot of people were, it was starting to die at that time, but the formula for like the late 80s, early 90s independent wrestling in New Jersey would be, you know, you really didn't see, once in a while they pop up, but like you wouldn't really see, like, you know, how everyone does like American Legions, VFW halls and stuff like that. Like back then, it really wasn't like that. Like back then, the majority of independent wrestling shows in my area were in high school gymnasiums. So that you would see the most of that more than anything else. And that's a formula that WWF did back in the, you know, early 80s to mid 80s, even the later part of the 80s, and maybe even into the early 90s, where, you know, their B shows or C shows, they would be at a local high school gym and be a fundraiser for, you know, the key club or the football team or something like that. So wrestling was, and today it's really not anymore in this area. And that's, you know, another story. But back then it was big in high school. So my original, you know, train of thought was, you know, and even at this time, I'm only 21 years old, but I still, you know, I still get it. And I thought I knew everything back then. I didn't know shit. I say that right now, but I knew enough to know that I needed to do this. And that thing was, you know, if I reached out to every high school in the state of New Jersey and said, hey, you know, my name's Tommy Fierro, I'm looking to do a fundraiser to raise money for you. I knew, you know, it wouldn't really have any merit to it. Whereas if I had some kind of a name behind me to open up eyes when someone got back then I wasn't even doing email. Back then what I did was I made a 4-page color brochure for doing fundraisers with ISPW. And what I did was I contacted King Kong Bundy, and he worked for me several times already by this point. And I said, this is the idea I have. I want to reach out to every school in the state of New Jersey, and, you know, every different group, whether it be the, you know, the class of 1999, or, you know, the soccer team or the football team or whatever. The cool thing is when you do high school shows back then, like, you literally, when you're reaching out to a school, you had 20 different leads right in front of you, because, you know, you had, you know, the class of 2000, class of 1999, 2000, 2001, 2002, you know, football, wrestling team, baseball team, softball team, you know, different clubs, key club, blah, blah, blah. So, like, there was a lot of leads within one lead. So what I said to him was, I would like to, you know, use your name to help us get a lot more shows. So I was contacting all these organizations as King Kong Bundy. So they would get, what I did was, back then it was fax, everything was like really fax machines. So I got the fax number of every high school in the state of New Jersey, every high school. And I faxed over the brochure to them, and they're getting this brochure, and, you know, you see this big man, King Kong Bundy, standing on top of Hulk Hogan, like, it's the first thing you see on this, you know, on this pamphlet. And back then, this is 1999. So, I mean, Bundy is like, he had that second run in WWE with, you know, WrestleMania with The Undertaker and all that stuff. So, like, he's pretty fresh off TV himself at this point, a couple years removed. And, you know, he's a big, iconic pop culture name, especially in this area, because a lot of people know he's from New Jersey. So you're these organizations getting, you know, getting these faxes or getting pamphlets mailed to you in the mail, and you're opening up, and you're, and it's from King Kong Bundy wanting to help raise money for you. It opened a lot of doors that wouldn't open for me at that point. And I was only 21. And I think I got over like 30 something high school shows that summer, or that whole year, 1999 into 2000, beginning, like, cause I think I started sending them out, I think right when the school year started. So from September 98, or I'm not sure which one was. It was like a year span of like 30 something high school shows using, you know, his name. And obviously he was compensated. He would get his regular fee for him being on my shows. And back then he wrestled still too. So you just throw like a local guy in there with him, and that's pretty cool too, that he was going to wrestle on them, and he did. So like, he'd get paid to wrestle, and then obviously he's going to sell his gimmicks, you know, pictures, autographs, stuff like that. And then I gave him extra for me using his name every show I got. So he was happy because he was making money, and I was happy because I was getting all these shows as a 21-year-old. So it was pretty cool. I will say though, man, he could be very grouchy. Anyone that knows him personally, he's a funny guy. He's fucking very quick-witted the way he spoke, but, like, he can be grouchy, too. I definitely don't think that now, like, the promoter I am now compared to I was back then, like, I don't think that he would be that way with me anymore if he was still around. And what sucks is that I actually had him scheduled to be at my first 80s wrestling con back in 2019, Jay. You remember this because you made the graphics for the website. And he was supposed to be a part of it and actually passed away 2 months before the convention or 3 months before the convention. And that convention also had Mean Gene Okerlund booked for it, and he passed away before the convention. So that was two big hits to not only the 80s wrestling world and the wrestling world in general, but also for my convention. I had both of those guys booked. But, yeah, man, that's my story of how I partnered up with King Kong Bundy.
So when I think of wrestlers during this time period, if I'm a young Tommy Fierro and I'm thinking about which guy would seem approachable, King Kong Bundy, at least his on-screen persona, did not seem to be a guy who would be approachable. And so what is your very first – you said he worked for you a couple times before you guys teamed up to do the fundraising.
Oh, no, several times.
So what was your first – do you remember your first encounter with him and what your initial thought was, like, when you were making that first phone call or when you first shook his hand? Like, part of you had to be a little trepid inside.
You know, I'll be honest with you, I don't remember the very first time I used him because I used him a lot. He was on a lot of my shows and events in the past. But, yeah, I mean, I'm sure the first time I met him and used him, I mean, he's a big guy. He was a big guy, man. Like, you see him on TV, like, you see him in person, man. He's just as big. He's just a big man. He was super cool, though, because, like, he just told it like it was. Like, he didn't like something, he would just say it. And, like, he's kind of like CM Punk. did you hear that thing a couple weeks ago with CM Punk where he just shit on everybody?
Yeah, the press conference? Yeah, I watched it.
Let me tell you something. I'm sure everyone has seen it by now, but what everyone has to do is go on YouTube and listen to Jim Cornette's take on it. It's fucking hysterical because they're playing clips of it. They're playing the whole thing, but they're breaking it down.
Sure.
Him and this guy, and they're breaking it down, and like just hearing Jim Cornette laugh at what Punk's saying is so fucking funny. Like, I listened to it. I just listened to it the first time yesterday. I listened to it three times already. That's how much I enjoy it. And real quickly, man, I want to say, and this is way off topic, we're talking about King Kong Bundy here, but I have to say, man, I agreed with every single thing CM Punk said. Every single thing. And I think he's the man after him doing that. And but the funniest thing, though, like if you're just listening to it and you didn't see it, go on YouTube and watch it, because you just see this guy here, man. He's fucking bloody, he's tired, he's beat up, and he's sitting there and he's eating muffins and licking his fingers and just telling it like it is. It's freaking awesome. It's probably the best thing I've seen and listened to in a very long time. I don't know how I got on that topic. I'm saying sorry about that, but yeah, Bundy was like that. Bundy would just say what it was on his mind.
Well, yeah, and not to stay on the CM Punk thing, but one of the funniest things about it is if you watch the press conference, sitting right next to him is the guy who runs AEW, Tony Khan, and I don't think he was prepared for what was coming out of CM Punk's mouth. So if you watch it, you can watch Punk and listen to what he's saying and then rewatch it and watch the reactions of the guy sitting next to CM Punk, and you can tell that maybe CM Punk was unscripted at the moment.
Oh, well, bro, he was definitely unscripted. And but just seeing Tony Khan sitting there and like his reactions, and like you almost, as a promoter, you know, as a promoter, I almost want to feel sorry for the guy. You know, he's just sitting there, just like he has no idea what CM Punk's going to say next. He has no idea when CM Punk's going to stop. And like my favorite part of that was, he tried to interject Tony and was saying something about, oh, you know, I should have took this question head on or whatever. And like, and then CM Punk just goes, we're all still learning here, Tony. This is fucking classic. I'm going to have to probably go back and listen to it again today.
So CM Punk is from Chicago. King Kong Bundy is a New Jersey guy. Is not that Chicago's East Coast, but if you live where I live, Minnesota, and if you live where, you know, Brian the Brain lives on the West Coast, both Chicago and New Jersey is towards that East Coast from us. Is that kind of a New Jersey kind of style thing where you just speak whatever on your mind? Like, we have something here in Minnesota called Minnesota Nice, where we may think something, but we won't necessarily say it. We'll beat around the bush. But CM Punk, obviously speaking from the heart, you said King Kong Bundy was very much the same way. Do you think that, do you think New Jersey guys, not that CM Punk's New Jersey guy, but do you think New Jersey guys kind of tell it like it is in general?
Man, I'll tell you what, from the people I hang out with, absolutely. I'm not sure about the rest of the state of New Jersey, but my inner circle of people that live in this area that I'm friends with, they definitely tell it like it is.
Well, and there's something to be very much appreciated about that, because then you know where you stand with a guy like King Kong Bundy. Somebody else who always tells it like it is the gentleman that's waiting on the line. We're talking to our good friend, Toto with Tom. Tom, welcome to the King Kong Bundy episode.
Dave. Yeah, Dave, I got to go. I'm on the podcast now.
On the phone with Dave, yep.
Tell me about Tony Khan, okay, later. All right, Dave.
Meltzer's
Jay,
boy.
Tommy. Meltzer, yeah, he was just on the phone. He was telling me something. Anyway, my first recollection of King Kong Bundy was, I think it was like the late 90s. This isn't my first recollection, but this is like my interaction with him. It was like the late 90s or around 95. Tommy, you would know better. A wrestling convention in Totowa at the Holiday Inn on Route 46. Yes, I know. So what was that, Tom? About 95?
I had him on a couple there. I'm not sure, but yeah, you can continue with the story though. Yeah, but I had him a few times.
So I went with my friend, and we did get pictures. And my friend specifically wanted Bundy to pin him up against the wall. And then when we took the picture, instead of the three count, Bundy said, "You know, it has to be five." So we like counted five times, and he like pushed his head up against the wall, and it's a great picture. And every so often on Facebook, my friend will, you know, it comes up as like a memory or something like that. He'll like post it saying, my experience with King Kong Bundy at the Holiday Inn in late 90s. Okay. Later on after that, I don't know if you knew this, Tommy, maybe you did, but there was a bunch of wrestlers who were willing to come to your house to watch Monday Night Raw with you. It was when Raw was really at its peak.
Yeah, that was me that did that with Bundy too. It was called it was called Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, that was you.
That was me too. Yep.
So we all got together and we were going to put some money and, you know, have him come over. And I remember it was going to be at my house in Totowa, but my wife was dead against it because she was like, this guy's going to destroy our furniture. Where are we going to sit him? And, you know, I thought about it, and I said, you know what? You're right. Where would we have sat a 480-pound behemoth?
That's great, man. So did you ever – I'm not sure if you know this story or not, Tom, because you live in the area, but I also had a show – it was 19, and I remember the first time I used them, Jay. It was 1995, and it was at St. Gerard's Church in Paterson, New Jersey, and the main event of the evening. And I've done this match twice. I'm proud to say I've done it twice. Kong Bundy against the Iron Sheik. I had it there, and I also had it in Wildwood. But, I mean, just think about that for a second. So I'm 21 years old at the time. It's 1990. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm 19 years old at the time. Or it was probably, it might have been 18 or 19. And it's 1995. I'm having Iron Sheik versus King Kong Bundy, two guys that a year or two before that, just a couple years before that, were two of the biggest name wrestlers ever in pop culture history. And me growing up a huge wrestling fan, and now I'm 18 years old, and I'm having King Kong Bundy and Iron Sheik wrestle each other on my show. It's pretty fucking cool if you stop and think about it for a second, you know?
Now, who worked as a face? Was it Bundy?
It was Bundy, yeah.
Very interesting. I have a trivia question for you, Tommy, regarding
sure.
Bundy. What was the nickname that Gorilla Monsoon gave him?
The Walking Condominium.
There you go. You know, Gorilla
that's
Monsoon
a cool name.
Is sorely missed in wrestling. He was such an underrated broadcaster. I know, he had a great Hall of Fame career
fantastic.
As a wrestler, but
he was awesome, dude. He's tremendous. I mean, just everything from that era, man, was just tremendous, and that's why we have a podcast that we talk about every week, and that's why we have loyal listeners like you, my man, who call up and listen to it every week, because we can't get that out of our system. Like, that, after our childhood, that was when wrestling, we loved wrestling the most. We'll probably talk about this shit for years to come, for a long, long time.
Something that we've been talking about for a couple weeks now was that last match pay-per-view. And Jumping Jay, I never got to hear your reaction to it last week. You had asked me what mine was, and I gave it, but then we never touched on what you thought about it.
Well, I thought the card overall was extremely entertaining. I thoroughly enjoyed it. When it comes down to Ric Flair's match, obviously I wasn't expecting a 5-star match. I was expecting somewhat of a spectacle. You were there for the pop and circumstance. You were there to see this icon perform. I was thrilled to see the number of other legends that came to watch. You know, you had The Undertaker, you had Mick Foley, you had Bret Hart there. You had Diamond Dallas Page in the crowd. And so that was heartwarming to see that they were there to offer their support. The match itself was structured great. Ric Flair, I mean, for being 70-some years old, you're not going to see the vintage Ric Flair. I won't say the old Ric Flair. We saw the old Ric Flair. You didn't see the vintage Ric Flair. I thought it was okay. As long as Flair is happy with the performance, then I got nothing bad to say about it. I'm glad I watched it. I'll put it that way. I'm glad I saw it.
Did you guys also hear that PWI came out yesterday with the top 500?
Yeah. I got a chance to see it, actually.
I haven't seen the list myself yet, but I'll be curious to know if any of ISPW made it onto the list. It's always
I didn't see the whole list. I saw, like, the top 20 names. But I will say they definitely got the number one pick right, and I think that I was listening to Busted Open yesterday. I've listened to that every day here. I have it on the store. They all agreed as well. Roman Reigns was the number one pick, and I don't think anyone's had a more dominating year in recent memory than him. I think he's the best in the business right now.
Yeah, I agree. You know, having the Peacock that allows you to get all that WWE content is really cool, because you can go back and see some of King Kong Bundy's earlier matches when he first started off. I think it was a promotion down in Texas. Revealing aspect of seeing Bundy is he has hair.
Yeah. He does. He has a full head of hair.
I've only seen him bald his entire life. And then those first matches, I think he had overalls on too as well, but he had hair. It was amazing. It looked like he actually got bigger as he got older too, because he didn't look as big.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. But hey, man, real quick before you go, what is your favorite King Kong Bundy moment or memory that if you think about his whole career? What's the one thing that stands out to you?
The first WrestleMania, because I watched it and I remember seeing SD Jones get beat in it was pretty quick from what
9 seconds.
What I remember. Yeah.
That's how long you usually last, right?
Yeah.
that's what cut me off a couple of weeks ago.
That's awesome. But you know what the side story to that, Tommy? The side story to that WrestleMania 1 match, and I know it was spoken here a few weeks back by Tony Atlas, was that it was supposed to be Atlas that was going to wrestle Bundy in that match. But the promoters knew ahead of time that Bundy was going to be wrestling at WrestleMania 2 next year against Hogan, because they usually predict, you know, if things go well, usually a vision a year in advance of what you're going to do. And they were afraid that Atlas was going to just screw it all up by picking Bundy up and press slamming him. And they didn't want Bundy to look weak. You know, they wanted to keep him strong. That's another funny story. And I think they paid Atlas a bunch of money to go out to dinner with his wife that night. They said, don't bother, you know, you're not coming to the show. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Hey, real quick, also, before you go, just check this out, Jumpin' Jay. I got a Total What Tom scoop for you.
Breaking news. Lay it on us.
So this past weekend, Total What Tom stopped at the Wrestling Collector. Missy Hyatt was here on Saturday doing an autograph session. And Total What Tom came and was hanging out for a while. Always enjoy his company here when he comes to the store. My mom came early to relieve me because it was my daughter's first cheerleading game. So she worked the last couple hours of the shop. But while Total What Tom was here, my mom had brought me over some lunch. Now, my mom makes very, very, very good, I mean, extremely good pasta salad. And it's got, you know, the different color pasta in it with, you know, peppers and provolone cheese and ham cut up and other stuff, tomatoes. It's really, really good. And, you know, she brought me some and I'm eating it. And I can corner my eye, man, I see Total What Tom just eyeing up my pasta salad. So I'm like, I think my mom said, do you want some? I don't think we had another plate or another fork or whatever. So I posted something the other day on Facebook, Jay. So my mom chimes in with something related to do with the wrestling post, nothing to do with anything, any food or anything. So then Total With Tom underneath, because Total With Tom knows my mom's coming to the ISPW show in Totowa next Friday, the 23rd, the King of ISPW tournament. Quick plug for that. And he says underneath the post, hey, maybe you could bring some of that pasta salad. Can you believe that? The balls on this guy.
So I'm assuming it was good. I'm assuming it was good, Tom. Good pasta salad.
I'm going to go out of my way, Jay, to make sure some way, somehow, my mom makes some salad next week, and I'm going to have her bring him some. So in 2 weeks, you can get the report of how good Mama Fierro's pasta salad is from Total With Tom right here on 80s Wrestling Podcast.
That is an exclusive. I like it.
All right, brother. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Thank you. Total With Tom out.
Mama Fierro pasta salad. On sale now at 80swrestlingcon.com.
Hey, real quick before you go, I will tell you what is on sale at 80swrestlingcon.com, and we're going to talk a lot more about this next week on the show. Our musical, The Last Match, a pro wrestling rock musical, a one-night show, is going to be coming to Jersey City, New Jersey, at the White Eagle Hall on Monday, September 26th. Actually, two shows. One's going to be at 2:30. One's going to be at 7:30. In between the two shows, Matt Cardona, who's obviously red hot right now in the wrestling business, he will be doing a meet and greet in between sets. You can actually get tickets for that on 80swrestlingcon.com if you live locally. But we're going to talk a lot more about the Last Match musical on next week's episode, which is going to be starring Matt Cardona. And training and rehearsal started this past Monday, Jay. And it's going to be really cool, man. So we'll talk about that here more next week on the show.
I cannot wait. I'm looking forward to that conversation because I've been following The Last Match on social media, and it just seems to be getting bigger and bigger. I didn't even know Matt Cardona could sing, but I'm excited to hear what he has to offer.
Maybe I get Jeremiah James on for next week. He's the producer of it. So I'll talk to him and get him on. We'll talk more about it and stuff like that, because I know we had him on when it first started, but a lot has a lot of stuff has developed between now and then, so it'd be cool to get him on. But I know our next call coming up is a man that knows many, many things, correct, Jay? Like, totally a lot of things.
Listen, he knows anything to do with Canadian-related wrestling. He's the man with so many talents from a country that is so much better than yours. And he's got to wear shades, or he used to have to wear shades when Bundy would walk around New Jersey, because the shine from that dome would reach all the way to David from Canada. Good morning, sir.
Morning, guys. How you doing?
Hey, fantastic. Brother. How are you, man?
Good, good. I know all this talk about past, I'm on lunch now, and this talk about pasta salad, I'm just like, thank goodness it's lunch, because I don't know how I'd get through another period of teaching without eating now because of this pasta salad.
Hey, brother, you know what? Maybe I can ship some up for you.
Yeah. Here's your surprise. Here's the pasta salad, right?
Yeah, man.
David.
So,
David, let me ask you this. Canada is a big, big place, so you can be a lot of places. But what time is it where you're eating lunch right now?
It is 10:46, so we're in the same time as
that's
in the
Tommy.
Same time zone as
okay.
as Tommy.
Yeah,
and,
that's not bad.
Yeah, like we have. Yes, it's okay.
Yeah, one of my favorite things about school is sometimes you'll be eating Sloppy Joe's at like 9:30 a.m. because that's when your lunch happens to hit. It was always an odd thing.
Real quick, guys, I don't mean to jump in, but Jay, you seemed very, very, very startled when he said he was eating lunch. Like, you had to know, what time is it over there? Like, he's like, take it easy, pal. Let the guy enjoy his bologna and cheese sandwich, all right?
Because, listen, man. I used to. I mean, I attended school,
If you don't eat lunch in Minnesota, if you eat lunch a second before 12 noon, or a second after 12:30, they write you off forever over there.
Listen, I went to school myself. I have a teaching degree. I was a substitute teacher for a year, and sometimes, depending on the schedule, they would have you eating lunch at like 9:30 in the morning, which was just always so odd to me, but when it's in your schedule, you got to eat.
But why did you sound so like startled when he said he was eating lunch? Like, what time is it over there?
Because I care. Because I care. I have a big heart. David, we're talking about King Kong Bundy.
Take a bite of the
bologna and tell us your thoughts.
Listen, again, before we talk about King Kong Bundy, after all this talk, Dave, I got to know, what are you having for lunch today?
Actually, I don't know. What am I having? Let's see. I got to open it.
Mystery meat. I love it.
Some hot dogs wrapped in like a pastry.
Ooh, that sounds
good. Yeah, very, very fancy, I know.
That's about the most French-Canadian thing I've heard, a hot dog wrapped in a croissant.
Yeah. It's called leftovers from, you know, what can I get my toddler to eat, you know?
I love it.
So when we talk about King Kong Bundy, first of all, I'm sure this has been talked about already, but I want to add my voice to the he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Let's get him there. But also that, I think, you know, a lot of people have been talking about the wrestling part, but I also felt that it's interesting. Like, I loved him as a wrestler. I loved him as a character. And I think it just goes to, you know, there's a whole line of big guys. Like, he's one of those famous big men that's just great, and the King Kong just worked perfectly for him. And we have our own version of that. We have King Kong Mosca. I don't know if you ever heard of him, but he was a former Canadian football player who wrestled it off, and it always reminds me of that. But I also find him interesting is because he's one of those guys that in some ways was a little bit of a trailblazer for guys who came after him, because, you know, a lot of people are you know, continuing the wrestling livelihood, like say somebody like Mick Foley right now, you know, they go on tour, they have a stand-up show. Roddy Piper did that as well. You know, when sort of breaking down kayfabe a little bit, and King Kong Bundy was one of the first guys who, you know, not the first, but one of the first guys who kind of branched off in that way, right? Like, he had a whole stand-up comedy career, you know, which I think is kind of cool. And it's someone like, that's not, I mean, to me anyway, that's not the person I would envision being a stand-up comedian, especially based on his wrestling character. But, you know, he had a bit of an acting career, and then he obviously went and did the stand-up thing too. And I think that kind of, in some ways, paved the, based on the way he, the timing he was for a lot of guys who came after who, you know, even Undertaker now has a show that he's kind of touring around a little bit. And I think it's cool to, you know, be able to kind of break that door down a little bit for guys to still interact with the fans other than just do a signing, but kind of, you know, make a living after wrestling. Because as we know, you know, there's the guys who make it big and whatnot and, you know, can survive off that income for as long as they're around. But, you know, guys who are, you know, sometimes main event or mid carders, you know, don't have that luxury or didn't make that money. Or if, you know, you got injured early in your career. And I think, you know, Bundy is remembered for obviously what he did in the ring, but I think he's also remembered for what he did outside of the ring too. And I think that's something to be noted and something that's cool.
Awesome, man.
It's interesting to me that guys like King Kong Bundy and now The Undertaker are doing the one-man shows, because you wouldn't expect that from their characters. When Mick Foley started touring, you kind of could see that if you read his books or saw, you know, his brother Love persona. You could tell he had that comedic side. But, yeah, it's surprising when intimidating figures on screen have that nuance to them that they can then go and be a great storyteller on top of it.
Yeah, man, and I remember pretty much Undertaker always stayed in character also and until recent years. So you thought of him doing, you know, a one-man show a year ago, even a year ago. You know, he's talked in documentaries and stuff like that, but he hasn't really done anything like that. So even like a year ago, you said, hey, Taker to start touring around doing a one-man show, you would never – I probably wouldn't even believe it. So – here's the thing, though. You know, he's not wrestling anymore. His name is fucking gigantic in wrestling. One of the biggest names, if not the biggest name in wrestling. And if someone says to him, hey, you can make $100,000 plus a show every time you do a one-man show, I guarantee his freaking his attitude about it or his thoughts about it switch real quickly. Because, I mean, think about this, like the guys, you know, he paid his dues obviously 30 years ago, but if he can, you know, he does 24 shows a year, sporadically throughout the year. So if he's working twice a month, that's not really working, right? And you're going to make $2 million for that? Where do I sign? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It when you put it in those kind of terms, it's pretty staggering, actually.
Yeah. So you think about that. Like, he's probably making at least $100K. It could be more, man. He could be getting, you know, who knows? Let's say it's $100K, but I'm sure he's getting that. You do that 24 times. That's, you know, that's what? Do the math. 2.4 million, right?
Yep.
Yeah, man. That's. That's nothing to sneeze at, you know? And so, yeah, man, there's money. He can probably do so much other stuff, too. I mean, he can make money doing anything forever.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Brother Jay, you still there?
I'm here. I'm just listening. Yeah, that's a great way to make a living, especially if you enjoy being a storyteller and traveling around and telling your tale. Why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah, I think there's always the market for it, too, that people, you know, even especially, like, with all the wrestling podcasts that are out there now and the audience that they have, right? Like, the audience for the stories and hearing the stories and hearing, you know, not like dirt, but just insider stories about, or you know, stories from the road or, you know, they've got a lot of all these funny stories that they can tell that just, you know, you don't even need necessarily a ton of ability to, you know, make jokes or think about jokes. It's just like, I can just tell the story and it's just funny the way it is. And the audience is there, both obviously in the United States, but around the world, right? Canada. Yeah. And, you know, Australia, Europe, like there's tons of places where these wrestlers can go and tell their stories and fans are just going to eat it up.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. I would love to see the Taker tell some tales.
Yeah, right, even though they say, you know, dead men tell no tales, but hey.
Hey, I tell you what, we're gonna have you pick the topic for us next week here on 80s. Actually, I'm not sure if we're going to do the – we might do a last match musical one, but if we do that the following week, the next topic we talk about, what would you like it to be? I'm going to have you pick it.
Let's go with the Stinger. Let's go Sting.
Ooh.
Oh, okay, we can do
that.
I like
it. I like it.
Yeah, man. All right,
we're
doing Sting next time we cover something.
I like it.
Yeah, man.
We're doing it. We're doing a Sting episode. All right.
And since I picked the topic, Canada. I'm obligated to call in, so I'll talk
yes.
to you then, guys.
Just do me a favor. Whatever you do, make sure you're not eating your lunch because Jay's going to have a fucking heart attack. Three times that you're eating at 10:45 in the morning.
Listen, I just want to make
no
sure.
No mention of food. I got it.
Sure, he's got
no
enough nourishment to sustain the day. I just want to make sure he's got enough energy to get through the day. That's all I was asking.
I appreciate it, Jay.
All right, man. Thank you so much.
All right, take care, guys.
Later.
Busting my chops about, listen, I was just, sometimes teachers eat at odd times. I was very curious.
You've been busting my chops since week one, buddy.
All right, here's what we're going to do, Tommy. I've got this list of things that fans may not remember about King Kong Bundy. And I'm going to be honest with you. Some of them have already been brought up in today's conversation. So
okay. Our
callers and you, you're definitely more up on the career of King Kong Bundy than the average person. So I'm going to read through some of these, and I just want you to react to them. Tell me if you knew it. Tell me if you didn't know it. Tell me if maybe you forgot it. But here we go. One of the things that most people don't know is that King Kong Bundy was in the King of the Ring tournament back in 1987.
I knew that.
This was before King of the Ring was actually a pay-per-view. It was just an annual tournament. And he actually made it all the way to the finals before losing to Randy Savage.
Yes, I know that because I actually just recently did some research for King of the Ring because next Friday we're doing the King of ISPW tournament. And I was just Googling some stuff. So I saw that. So I knew that. And if I didn't Google that last week, I might have not have known that.
Yeah, he was one match away from being the king, King Kong Bundy.
Literally
which,
the king.
Yeah, which would have been kind of cool. Another fact that most wrestling fans have forgot is that he did do some acting. You and I referenced that he was on Married with Children, the 80s sitcom. Interesting fact, the writers of that show actually named the family the Bundys because they were a fan of King Kong Bundy, which is kind of a nice
That's
little
awesome.
Tidbit. But the other fact that most people forget is that he was in a movie with Richard Pryor called Moving, where he played a bulky furniture mover who ended up getting into a fight with Richard Pryor.
Yeah, man, so absolutely. I think that's really between that, because I think Married with Children was 87, and then Moving, the movie was 88. So, I mean, at that time, man, he's right in the – he's right in the middle of pop culture. And then also later in his career, he was himself on the TV show Word Science and also Boy Meets World as well.
Yeah, didn't he play? No, Vader played one of the bully's dads on Boy Meets World. I wonder what King
No,
Kong
but Bundy was on there too, I believe.
He was. Good. And at this time in the late 80s, Rich Pryor is what, like, the Kevin Hart is now of comedy. Like, he was the big comedian. And so if you're in a movie with him, you're being seen by a lot of eyeballs. Another fact that most people forget is that when we picture King Kong Bundy, a lot of us associate him by being matched by Bobby the Brain Heenan. He came back as part of Million Dollar Man's Million Dollar Corporation. But his original manager in the WWF was?
Jimmy Hart.
Yeah, Jimmy Hart. Most people don't remember that. We referenced that he held the WrestleMania record. The fastest match he beat.
Yeah, you're cutting in and out on my end. Just so you know.
Oh, he beat SD Jones in 9 seconds. We already referenced that, so we remember that. A lot of people forget that he started his career as a babyface, but you booked him in ISPW as a babyface, so you know what was up. Let's see another fact. He appeared on the first ever ECW supercard, so he's got ECW on the resume. This one surprised me. Are you ready for this one, Tommy?
I'm ready.
He was an original member of the stable, the Legion of Doom.
Yes, I did.
I did not know that. So usually when people hear League of Doom, they think of only Hawk and Animal. They think of the Road Warriors. But it was actually a stable that included Jake the Snake, the Spoiler, Bundy, and the Road Warriors, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, man.
Then the last fact, let's see, is that he has hair. He's bald by choice. And the reason he got rid of the head of hair is he lost a hair versus hair match against Fritz Von Erich. And once he shaved his head, he realized it made him look more imposing, so he kept it. Those are the facts about King Kong.
I love it. I love it, man. Yeah, really interesting episode today. Lots of taking away from it. But I think the biggest thing to take away from today's episode is that we just talked about his career. We didn't even dive that much into it. The guy had a fantastic career in the wrestling business, and it's a shame that he is not in the WWE Hall of Fame. But there's always time to change that, and hopefully whatever differences, obviously there must be for him not to be in it, because it's mind-boggling that he's not in it. The guy, like Jay said earlier, the guy's gone now. Just put him in. He deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. The guy main evented WrestleMania 2 against Hulk Hogan in a steel cage match. So I think him not being in it is just silly. Just like Demolition not being in it is just silly. But anyhow, I had a great time talking to you today, Jay. I learned a lot. I learned that you are dead set against anyone eating lunch this early in the morning. You really were taken back by that. So I'm going to make sure I do not eat lunch until at least 12:30, 1 o'clock today. I don't want to offend you.
The other thing that I got a kick out during that conversation is when he said he's eating hot dog in a croissant, your response was, delicious. I'm asking you for the truth right now. Have you ever eaten a hot dog tucked inside a croissant?
Hell yeah.
Is that like a pig in a blanket type thing?
Yes,
or do you guys
use
croissants instead of buns?
Well, listen, man, you do things a lot differently in Minnesota than we do up here, my friend.
I'm going to be honest. My light bulb just went off when I said it a second time about it being a pig in a blanket, because I've had those. But when he said he was eating a hot dog nestled in a croissant, I pictured him eating a croissant like a hot dog.
He did not say nestled.
No, play it back. He said a hot dog nestled in a croissant.
Did he really say that?
I don't know. We'll have to listen to this show. But I was picturing him using a croissant like a hot dog bun. But now when I said it to you, he's eating a pig in a blanket, which is perfectly acceptable at 8:30 in the morning.
Absolutely. So, hey, man, you got me hungry now. I'm actually in the mood for a hot dog and sauerkraut.
With a side of pasta salad.
No.
Spaghetti now.
I actually brought my lunch today, my friend. I'm good for today.
All right,
man. Well, listen.
So
you
next week, are we doing an update on the last match? Because I want to know everything that's going on. Because I've been following on social media. It looks amazing.
Yeah, man. We'll do that next week's episode. We'll do a special edition of the last match of Pro Wrestling Rock Musical right here on 80s Wrestling Podcast. Hopefully going to get Jeremiah on. I know they're in training next week, and it's also the first day that Matt Cardona is going to be there training as well. So I'm not sure it's going to be a good time. It might not be a good time.
It might not work. That sounds like a
Yeah, I just realized that it's probably not going to work because he gets in that day. So, yeah, we're not going to be able to do that. We can
do
a follow-up
next week.
We'll do a follow-up. We'll do the Sting episode next week.
We'll do Sting next week, and then the week after that, the last match.
Yeah, man, absolutely. That way it'll be afterwards, so we can talk all about it as well.
That's huge, man. That's huge.
Yeah, man, so we'll do that. So next week we're going to talk about the life and career of the Stinger, starting out from UWF on the NWA, and eventually would make his way into the WWE. And I like to talk about that. I know it's an 80s wrestling podcast, but I want to dive a little bit into his career in the WWE, Jay, and get your take on it and listeners' take. But until then, I hope you and your family have a great weekend, and I look forward to talking to you next week.
Me too. And I do look forward to it because I was not a fan of his WWE run. And we'll get into it next week right here on 80s Wrestling, the podcast.
Hey, so my ending.
I nestled in there just like a hot dog in a croissant.